My name's Carla, and I'm an addict. Grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous Clean. I want to welcome the newcomer and congratulate the 30, 60, and the 90-day. I remember what it was like when I took the 30 and the 60 and the 90. So welcome home. You know, stick around for a while. Give yourself an opportunity, you know, to for your life to get better. I want to thank Sissy for asking me to speak and for giving me an opportunity to give back what was freely given to me when I got here. You know, no cussing in this meeting, right? Bring it on. Anyway, you know, I was thinking about what I was going to say, and I don't really like to, you know, sound rehearsed or practiced, and you know, Randy put way too much on that introduction, you know. That's a really big order to fulfill, and a lot of times still today, you know, it's not like that for me, because I don't look at myself like that, and sometimes it's hard to accept or to believe that somebody else may feel that way. What my sponsor told me is that just say thank you. So thank you. I love you too. You know, I was born and raised in Ventura, California, and I was raised in a middle-class family. I was the middle child. I had two younger siblings, a brother and a sister, and then, of course, one older and one brother and sister older. And my mom was a workaholic. My real father was an addict, and I was raised by a stepdad that I call Pop. And when I was growing up in the household that I lived in, you know, way before I ever picked up drugs, way before I ever even thought that I was going to be where I'm at today, because it never really did enter my mind, but, you know, I never felt a part of anything. I tried church. I played in sports. I was on the all-star team. I played summer sports. I got ribbons, certificates, and trophies, and somehow Carla still didn't fit in. And what I used to do, because for some reason I felt it necessary to have to buy my friends. And so what I would do was, when we had relatives that would stay the night and they would leave their purse out on the table, I would take money from the purse. And I'd go buy candy the next day, and I would pass it out to all the neighborhood kids. And I had all these friends, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, I would feel a part of. And then, of course, when the sack of candy was gone and the cookies, then so were the friends. And I would do that over and over again, and I never, you know, I never got caught for that. And so, you know, when I first got here, I thought that, I didn't know that I was an addict. I thought that I just had criminal behavior. And if I could just stop my criminal behavior, then I would be okay. I just didn't want to go back to prison anymore. And when I really look back on that, I mean, I was doing criminal behavior when I was 7, 8, 9 years old. And this little school I went to, it was called Satakoi School. And they would, when they got to school, the kids would put their school, their lunch money outside of the door. And then they would go out on the playground and they would play, you know, until school started, and I would take that money as well. You know what, I haven't even thought about that in years, but that's real. And so I did really good in school. Up until the seventh grade, and the seventh grade, something happened inside of me. I had some things happen prior to that that were pretty devastating for me. And so I started hanging out with the kids that smoked and the kids that drank. And I felt, when I was drinking, I felt a part of. And so we would all pitch in money and we would hang out at the 7-Eleven, Stop and Go. It was a Stop and Go in Sadakoy. And we would have people buy us Boone Farm, Strawberry Hill. And then I would drink. And from the first moment that I drank, I blacked out. You know, something should have told me at that point that something just wasn't quite right. And it would only be on the weekends, maybe like, not Friday night, but maybe Saturday night, and then I would be okay, you know, and I'd go the whole week, and I would be cool. And then it eventually led up to Friday and Saturday. And then it was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And these kids that I was hanging out with at school started bringing it to school. So now I'm doing it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then at school as well. And so halfway through the school year, they kicked me out and they sent me to a continuation school. Mar Vista, they called it. And I was hanging, they didn't really have like grades. You just kind of went by day school or morning or evening. And so I started hanging out with people from what they called the Avenue in Ventura. They were, what did they call themselves? I think they were Rugged River Rats. And so I started running away and staying away on the weekends. And then eventually they kicked me out of continuation school. Can you believe it? So, you know, and by this time I'd been in and out of juvenile hall, running away. I would always go, it's up by Fresno where my father's side of the family lived, and I would always run away to them. And then somebody would always snitch me out, and then I'd be in juvenile hall in Fresno waiting for transportation down to juvenile hall in Ventura. And I remember one time my mom picked me up, and I was, you know, when I was younger, I was always going up and beyond the call of my duty, trying to get her attention. I always felt that I had to do more just to be on the same page. And I didn't think that she loved me, and I was angry. You know, I was just an angry, angry person and an angry kid. And she picked me up the last time that I ran away to my father's side of the family. And she stopped. I told her I had to go to the restroom, and I had plans that I was going to take off. And, you know, I guess she knew me better than I thought I did, than I thought she did. And she followed me to the bathroom. I'm like, shit. You know, God, I can't run if she's right there because, you know, one if she catches me, I know she'll kick my ass. And so I went in and I acted like I was going to the bathroom. And she told me. At that moment, I think that she wished my children on me. She told me, she said, she said, someday when you grow up and you have your own children, you're going to know, you know, what it feels like to not know where they're at every night, or if they're laying on a street corner dead, or if they're, somebody's hurting them. And she was crying. And I just started crying, and I hugged her, and I love you. You know, got back in the car and she took me to juvenile hall in Ventura. So, you know, that went on for a long time. And I started selling drugs, and I left Ventura with the carnival, and I was 16 and a half, something like that, and I traveled from Ventura to Phoenix, Arizona, to Texas, and I don't know if anybody's ever, you know, can relate to a carny life, but I can tell you that in Ventura they have showers on the fairgrounds, but when you get like, I thought it was that was a norm. Every fairground must have a shower for the carnies, but they don't. And so we got, you know, X amount of dollars a day for a draw. And so we couldn't spend that money renting motel rooms. So a bunch of us, maybe once or twice a week, would go in and we would get one room and then everybody would take showers. And then we would drink until the bar closed and then we would go back to the fairgrounds and we would go to sleep in trucks or in the booth. And wake up and be filthy and be dirty and just and do another day. And I ended up I met this man and he took me to New Orleans, Louisiana. And I stayed there for 12 years. My son was born there. When my son and the bars are open 24/7, so, I mean, it's an alcoholic haven. And I was tending bar when I was only 17 years old. At that time, you only had to be 18 to be in a bar, and I was big, so nobody ever questioned, you know, how old I was. And so I tended bar, and I left the guy that I was with because he physically and mentally abused me, and so I left that relationship to fall right into another verbally and physically abusive relationship, and I married this man, and we had a son together, and when he was 3 years old, well, my husband had threatened to kill me, and you know what, prior to that he had choked me with my son on the couch watching him choke me on the ground, and I fought until I started to go out and my legs went into spasms, and I guess he realized, you know, got a moment of clarity, and he stopped, and so I took my son, and he had never met my family in Ventura. He was 3 years old, and I flew him out to Ventura, and I asked my mom to watch him until, and I flew back to New Orleans, and when my husband came in from offshore, we were going to work things out, and then we were going to go get our son. And little did I know at that time, because I honestly believed that things were going to get better. And if I could just change the way and the things that I did, then maybe he wouldn't hit me, or, you know, maybe he wouldn't pull my hair, or stalk me, or any of those things. If I could just change me, then he would be okay. I didn't know. I didn't know that it was going to go from bad to worse. And so needless to say, I never came and got my son. And I would be drunk, and I would call her in the middle of the night, my mom. And I would want to talk to my son. And she would say, no, I'm not going to wake him up. He's sleeping. He has school tomorrow. And, you know, I would just hang up on her, and I would be so mad. How could she do that to me? How could she keep my son from me? How could she? Me. The last time that I flew from New Orleans to Ventura, I stayed because I truly believed in my heart that he was going to kill me. And the friends that I had all pitched in to buy me an airplane ticket to Ventura. And so I got introduced to my drug of choice, methamphetamine. And I was in heaven. It gave me the energy that I needed. All of a sudden, I was just as smart and pretty and thin as you. It allowed for me to work two jobs where I had two registers to steal from. And, you know, it went really well. It worked for me for a long time. You know, I never had any problems doing methamphetamines until I got clean or till the money ran out. Then the problems started. And so I started selling again. And by this time I was with another man, and I think we physically and verbally abused each other. And every time that we got caught, I was the one that got caught. I was the one that did the time. And anyway, he had a job when I met him, and I met him through my brother, and he had had the same job for like 8 years, and there's just something about me that, you know, I'll get somebody who's working and then they don't want to work anymore. You know, it's hard to get the bills paid like that. And so we lost our apartment, and I went from motel to motel. I lived in every motel there was in Ventura, selling drugs and paying for the room on a daily basis. My son went to every single school that they had in Ventura, because I was 1 week on one side of town, then I'd be on the other side of town. And I remember at one point where I started doing what I was supposed to be selling, and so we didn't have money to pay for a motel room, and he had worked this job for a couple of months, and it was a towing company. And there was a van parked out in front of the towing company, and it belonged to somebody who else, one of the bosses that worked there, and he asked him if we could stay there. And it was a nice van. It had nice clean carpet and all of that stuff. And I remember waking up one Sunday morning, and I started looking for him and my son. And I got out of the van, and they were taking a shower with a hose. And remember feeling the devastation and the hurt. And, you know, my son, he never complained one time, not once. All he wanted to be was with mom. That's it. His mom for many years was my mom. And when I first got back, he would call her mom. And, you know, it used to hurt me, but that was reality. She was his mom for many years, and he didn't know any different. And so I got picked up at Motel 6 on Seward Avenue, and I didn't have very much. It was like a 16th that I had separated in probably maybe 5 or 6 little quarters. Not a lot. And I had some weed. And the cops knocked on the door, and he had just left, so I thought it was him and that he had left his key. So I left the plate with the stuff on it on the bed, and I opened the door, and there was the police. Detectives, actually. And they asked if they could come in, and I said, well, can you give me a minute? And, you know, I don't know if you guys had experience with the Ventura Police Department, but they weren't waiting. And I guess what had happened was we were doing trading with guns, and so we had this rifle that we were concealing under a blanket, you know, and we carried it from the vehicle into the motel, and one of the security guards seen it, and so that made him start watching us. And I had a warrant out for my arrest at that time. And so the cops come in, and, you know, they do their shit. And they're like, just give us the stuff, and we'll just take you in for your warrant. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, where is it? Right, I had the stuff on the bed, but for the life of me, to save my life, I couldn't remember where I hid the pot. I always had to hide the pot from him because he was pinching the bags, and I didn't really like pot too much, so I could really sell that and make money to buy methamphetamine. And so they found it anyway, and so I went in and I got out on an OR. And of course, you know, I'm a good addict, so I went right back to the same thing. And it's the only way that I had, you know, to make our living, to pay for the motel room and all of that. So, because I'm so slick, I got caught again while I was out on an OR. And they just had passed this new law that if you're out in the OR or if you're out on bail and you pick up the same case and they send you to prison, it's automatic 2 years on top of that. So I wasn't going anywhere this time. But really, they kept telling me that I was going to go to CRC, and I believed that. And I was the last person to go before the judge that day. My daughter and her dad were sitting in the audience. And they sentenced me to 7 years and 8 months, which made me ineligible for CRC. And the courtroom was empty but them two, and he started crying, like, and my daughter started crying, like she didn't know what was going on, but she just knew that Dad was upset. And so anyway, I went to prison, and I thought they gave me life. I didn't know how I was going to be able to do that much time. I mean, that's a lot of time. I didn't think I was prison material. Obviously, they did. And so I spent 2 years in Chowchilla before they transferred me to San Jose, the Mother Infant Program. And that's where I was first introduced to the program. Anybody in here ever been to prison, you know, there's like anywhere from 35 to 4,500 other inmates. And I was sick of being around women. And even though I was a community prisoner, we could only go certain places. And so I went to this club, and I was introduced to the program. And I started out in the back, and I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say my name. I didn't talk to anybody, and I was just looking for my next victim. And for 2 years, I went every Friday and Saturday. And when they tell me that if you're here tonight, that I'm planning, if I don't reach any of you or if you can't relate to me, what I'm doing is planting a seed. I honestly believe that if you bring the mind, the body will, if you bring the body, the mind will follow, because that's what happened with me. And I used to believe when I first got here that if you're sitting, you know, that was death row back there. Today I don't believe that. Today I know any seat in Narcotics Anonymous is a good seat, whether you're in the back or you're in the front. So I did 2 more years there, and I got out Christmas Eve of 95. By that time, my mom moved from Ventura to Bakersfield, and she had my son with her. I had my daughter with me, and I transferred my parole to Bakersfield. And the time, the 2 years that I just kept going back and kept going back and kept going back, you know, something had changed inside me. Still not knowing that I'm an addict, but, you know, maybe there's something to this. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe I can come here and learn not to be a criminal. Don't sell drugs and don't steal. You know, I mean, I had this, like, I would go steal after being up for 6 or 7 days. And remember I told you guys that I couldn't trust him because he liked to pinch the bag, so I had to carry everything on me. And I would go steal dog collars. And I don't even have a dog. But the connection had a dog, so there was a method to my madness, and I did get caught stealing those dog collars and stuff. And anyway, that was the second prison term. So I got out on Christmas Eve, and my mother took me to a meeting Christmas Day. And I sat outside this club. I went inside, and my mother waited for me outside. And I met my second husband in a meeting, and I had 2 years, and he had 2 weeks. So I thought I had a year for me and a year for him. It didn't work like that, though. So it went from bad to worse, and he got loaded, and I got loaded, and I don't know what kind of addict you guys are, but I can tell you what kind of addict Carla is. And once I pick up one drug, one fix, one shot of alcohol, whatever, one of anything, and I'm going to run. I'm going to run, I'm going to run, I'm going to run, I'm going to run until they put handcuffs on me. And I'm not proud of that, but you know what? That's just the kind of addict that I am. A hope to die dope fiend. And sometimes I was mad that I did wake up. Sometimes I was hoping that I just would die, to just get it over with and not have to wake up and do another day like I did today. And so when he got loaded, I got loaded. And at this time, I'm working in the field of recovery. I'm working with kids, and I'm going to college. And this is coming from somebody that went into prison with a sixth grade education. I got my GED in prison when I was 30 years old. So I'm in college. And I did about half my classes, maybe a little more, loaded. And I went to work every single day, and I told those kids, don't pick up and use. And I would go in the bathroom, and I would put it in some tissue, and I would drink it. And you know, somebody said something a couple of weeks ago. They said, you don't have to use even if you don't want to. And I started thinking about that. And you know what? Every single day I didn't want to, but I did anyway. And I told myself, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop tomorrow. Tomorrow never came. I didn't know that I was in the grip of my disease and that I wasn't going to be able to stop. I didn't know that. And so one more time, you know, I get the test. This time I get CRC, and I spent 17 and a half months in there. And I came out and I went to a recovery program. And I thought I was smarter than the counselors. And I was educated, all right. And I didn't want to be in that program. I didn't want to be in any program. So everything that I could find wrong with that program, I did. And then we were supposed to be, I was part of FOLTAP, and so we were the pioneer FOLTAP girls. And they said, well, just, you know, I'm the liaison, and let's do, if you have any problems, blah, 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 blah. And so I, you know, opened my mouth, and then I got reprimanded for it, and that was promised that it wouldn't. So I realized that if I wanted to get out of the program, that I needed to keep my mouth shut and just do what I was supposed to do on a daily basis. Still thinking that I had all this all of this knowledge. And let me tell you something. All the knowledge in the world will not keep you clean. If they don't go from here to here, meaning your heart, the action part of it, you're effed. I was. I couldn't understand how a person like me that had all of this stuff going for him could get loaded. And I opened up the book, and there it was. All the knowledge in the world will not keep you clean. So when I got out of that program, he made it very difficult for me to go to meetings. He said, don't get any men's numbers. Who'd you talk to today? It was easier for me to just stay at home. And because I didn't get a sponsor, and because I didn't make meetings on a regular basis, and because I didn't work the steps, Carla was left up to her own devices. And when life started happening on life's terms, Carla couldn't deal with it, so Carla got loaded. I left him. I went to my mom's. About 3 days later, I went with a big truck, and I moved everything out of mine and some of his. And, you know, the next day, I got served with divorce papers. Can you believe it? Oh, my God! Don't he know who I am? Or who I think I am? And you know, I did not know how I was going to make it through the next day without him. I didn't. I was full of pain and I was full of fear and I cried a lot. And I don't know if you guys can relate to this because I've heard a lot of people still share that the last time that they got loaded that it was still working for them. And the only reason why they don't pick up today is because they don't want to pay the consequences. That's not my case, and that's not my story. The very last time that I got loaded, and I don't know if you can relate to this, but when you have a belly full of dope and a head that won't shut up, oh no. It was a very deadly combination for me. The drugs had stopped working, thank God. My mother was getting sick, and I know that I was going to go back one more time, or I was going to die. And so I did, remember I told you guys the seed had been planted? When I got to the fork in the road and I had nowhere else to go, I did the only thing that I knew how to do, and that was I come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I got here, they told me, just don't use between meetings, get a sponsor, read the book, and work the steps, and your life will get better. And I don't know if I believed them that my life could get better. Because I felt like I was going to feel what I was feeling forever. It didn't feel like that pain was ever going to go away. So I kept coming back. And I did way more than 90 and 90. I did, when I could do 2 meetings a day, I did. And I definitely did 2 on the weekends. Because I felt safe here. And because you people told me that you would love me until I could love myself. And I don't know if I believed them, but I didn't have any other choices. And so little by little, my life started to get better. And then I got this sponsor and I worked some steps. And then I really realized what an effed up person I was and how badly I treated my mom. And how she deserved so much more than she got from me. I took a 9-month chip and the next day my mother passed away. And I didn't know what I had until it was gone. She believed in me when nobody else believed in me. And she pushed me to excel. In fact, she's the one who told me I'd be a good counselor. That's why I went to KDAC, not because I believed I could do it. She believed it, and I did it. Because here comes, you know, that old pattern of wanting to please mom, wanting to be loved. And the way that I was, I wasn't a very lovable person. And most of all, I didn't love myself. So I took that 9-month shift. My mom was already in the hospital, and I know that when she left this world, that she didn't worry about Carla. That she had seen the difference in me for the first time in my life. And she did not go out of this world worrying about me. I'm grateful to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You guys walked me through that. You walked me through my divorce. You held my hand and you told me it's going to be okay. You'll get through this. You'll get through this. And I have 2 brothers and 2 sisters. And they all get loaded. So through this time of making the plans and stuff for my mom, I had to make all the decisions. I picked out what she wore. I picked out the coffin. I picked out the flowers. I picked out where it was going to be. I went and talked to her hairdresser to go out there and do her hair. And I was up for 3 days straight with no dope. And I got a little demonic. And I was going to fight my two sisters because, and I told them, if you guys really loved Mom, you would have helped me. And all the, that's all it took, right? So they got between us, and I went home, and I slept. And when I woke up, the first thing that I felt was gratitude. Thank God that one of her kids was clean to make her arrangements. Because it's the kids, you know, that was our job. And I know that I was the one that did it because I was the only one that could do it. And through that, I was able to make amends to my mother for all the time that I took money from her wallet. Hell, I even stole the whole wallet and took the money out and put the rest in a post office so it would be mailed back to her so I didn't feel so bad about myself. My mom was the best mom in the world. And every birthday and every and holidays and Mother's Day, I send flowers. She's buried in Oklahoma. And I send money to have silk flowers that they change out twice a year. And I had little vases mounted on the side of her headstone so that I could put those fresh flowers out there. And I'm the only one out of her children that does that. The only one. Thank God that I can. So I got through that with the help of you people and by the, you know, God, my higher power, by the grace of God. And this sponsor that I got, she was pretty hard, and, you know, she kept me accountable. At every meeting I went to, I had to get five numbers, and I had to call three people every single day. Women. That was a big hurdle for me to get through, but I couldn't trust in my own devices because my own devices got me locked up year after year. 27 years of jails and institutions. So, okay, I'm ready to, let me try it someone else's way. So everything that she told me, I did. I even had to pick up the phone and call him and tell him that I was sorry for what I had done to him, and I knew that I was giving him the opportunity to slice me one more time. And it took me 2 days to get up enough nerve to do that. And when I did that, you know what he did? He said, you know what? I'm sorry I hurt you too. I'm like, wow. You know, I would have never, because I don't know how you guys are, but I can tell you how I am. Whenever I have to do something that I don't really want to do, I already play the whole scenario out in my head. I know what everybody's going to say. I know what everybody's reaction is going to be, and it's not good. Never one time has it ever turned out the way that I thought it would. It was always good. So I got another sponsor, and I reached out to women, and I worked the steps again. And I can't tell you that my life would be the way that it is today. I'm not the mother or the person that I want to be, but thank God I'm not the mother or the person that I used to be. I have a semi-good relationship with my children today. I'm not a very good mother. I'm a hell of a good grandmother. You know, my grandkids have never seen me loaded. And I'm married to the man that I'm going to be with for the rest of my life. And he doesn't verbally or physically abuse me. And so if you're new and you're tired of living life the way that you were living, if you want to call that a life, I call it existing. You know, I'll tell you what they told me. Keep coming back, get a sponsor, read the book, work the steps, apply them in your life, and your life will get better. Not overnight. Not overnight. You didn't F it up overnight, and you can't fix it overnight. Just keep coming back. Give yourself a break. Narcotics Anonymous is the best deal in town. My name's Carla, and I'm an addict.
We have run out of time. Let's give it up for Carla one more time. For someone that used